When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did you enjoy hearing Bears OC on his message to the players after a loss to the Packers despite improvement from the offense?
There are no attaboys in this game. We played a game to win, and we came up short.
Did you like that from the Bears OC?
Yeah, that's the exactly correct attitude, and he's absolutely right. There are no attaboys in professional football, and they did come up short, and we know that. And the fact that it's now four games in a row should have everyone very, very nervous, because I know the Bears have never fired a coach in season, but you get another loss like that, you get another kind of moment where you're winning and you manage to lose and you walk away feeling like you blew the game. I don't know how much longer they can put up with it. I'm just saying, from a fan perspective, everyone's out of their minds. I think at some point, it's not going to matter what was done in previous years. This is a totally different NFL now than it was when the Bears were dominating in the 1940s. So, good reminder and a nice shot across the bow to the entire team that, yeah, you played better, but 19 points isn't going to get it done.
Great point. 19 points are not going to get it done. There are no attaboys. I agree wholeheartedly.
Everything you hear from Thomas Brown you like so far. He lost a game, but he didn't sound like he was defeated. He projects an air of confidence and belief and energy and enthusiasm. This is what the way you want your football coaches to sound. This is the impact you want them to make. I have to say, though, the more impressive he sounds on a weekly basis, the more indicting it becomes for the entire Bear organization. And I say that because as we sit along and nod our heads when he speaks, all that you can do after he's done talking is wonder, how in the world did he sit across from Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus and not impress them enough to get a second interview for the offensive coordinator job last offseason? If he was one of the nine guys who interviewed for the job of play caller and Shane Waldron got the job over him, what were they hearing? And how much do you doubt that judgment? The better he looks, the worse they do. I know that's a backward way of looking at it, maybe, because he's a guy that you can understand why people around the league have hired him, why people around the league may view him as a future head coach. He's going to be a head coach if he keeps talking like that and calling plays like he did and making progress and making impact. But it's great for the Bears now. I hope that they build on that offensive production last week. But why did they not hire him when they hired Shane Waldron instead of him?
Probably a better question for the league.
Special teams coordinator Richard Hightower took all responsibility for the blocked field goal attempt.
Obviously, extremely disappointed with the way the game ended. First and foremost, extremely disappointed for our players. But I'm also disappointed for support staff, our entire organization, and for the city of Chicago. As I always tell you all, for any success or any failure of any field goal, it starts with the protection, the operation, and the execution. And when those things are right, you have a successful field goal. When those things are wrong, your field goal isn't what you want it to be. And that starts and ends with me. And that was not the desired result that we wanted on that play.
Your reaction to what you just heard there from special teams coach Richard Hightower?
Well, that's what leadership sounds like, looks like, feels like. That's a football coach who's very football coachy, but that's the exact response you want to a crisis that he says is of his own making or he's responsible for. I don't think that it's entirely accurate or fair to hold him responsible for all those things. But that is exactly the way you want to sound. That is exactly what Matt Eberflus should have said. And again, when you talk about the biggest takeaways, when we hear these gifted speakers project on a Thursday, and it makes you wonder certain things. I wonder if Richard Hightower, when you hear him speak like a leader of men yesterday, as well as he did, as eloquent as he sounded, if it removes some of the questions about who would be interim head coach if they fired Matt Eberflus in the midst of the season. I think you could trust that guy with a lot. And I think yesterday you heard why.
Great point, David. Great, great point. It's been a theme of mine this week, not being thrilled with what I heard out of Halas Hall up at the podium. And again, at the end of the day on Sunday, it's show me, don't tell me. That's all that's going to matter. Show me, don't tell me. But we've talked about it ad nauseum, and I get why we're talking about it. But if the Bears were to make a move, I think we've just heard two clips back to back of guys that you could trust, at least moving forward, to carry the Bears to the finish line of this disappointing season.
It's a disappointing season. There's no shadow of a doubt about that. And, you know, there's a couple of examples of coaches who are standing up and saying the right thing after a loss. Now, they're doing it on Wednesday. And Thursday it was, which is insane. So, you know, here we are. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. We're still talking about the missed field goal on Friday morning as you get ready for the weekend. Why is that? Well, the NFL says you only have to have your guys. The league says you have to have them show up once a week. But I think the Bears ought to know that the Bears should have rolled Richard Hightower out Sunday after the game or Monday morning and tried to get this story put behind them. Okay? They failed to do that. You know, there are unsatisfactory answers out there about why you didn't get the ball onto the hash mark that the guy likes, why you didn't continue to move the ball. I mean, it's great that he took responsibility for what went wrong, but you could have used that earlier in the week for sure, but there still are some questions out there that just were not answered. And I think that leaves the subject open to a lot of speculation.
And that's the big question, right?
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, 7 a.m. Biggs time with Mully and Haw. Is Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson the most dangerous offensive player the Bears will face this year? If not, then who? And what's the general plan to contain him?
It's a good question. I think that Justin Jefferson is a very dangerous offensive player. The problem for him and for all players of his ilk is that he can't control when the ball gets to him, where it gets to him, etc. So I think that, you know, if you played Mahomes, that's more dangerous than Justin Jefferson because he's the trigger man in an attack. And the Bears, they don't play a ton of great quarterbacks this year. I think that Jared Goff is playing as well as anyone. But it's not like, you know, Josh Allen's having a great year. You don't have to face him. We know how tough the schedule is, and we know that the Bears have division opponents that are very good. But in terms of the most dangerous offensive player in the league, I would say that you could make a strong argument Justin Jefferson is one of the best receivers in the league and offers like an incredible skill set that can really mess you up. And if not kept in check, this guy can ruin a game. But I think the Bears, with Jalen Johnson in the mix, and I know the guy fell down last week, but I think that he's a pretty damn good corner, and I would use him as much on Jefferson as I could.
Well, he should follow him around. in my opinion. There should be that should just be a thing. None of this, like, he plays. Jalen just plays on that half of the field. He can't go beyond that hash mark. Save it. Okay, Jalen prefers to be over here. He follows him around. We've heard Jalen talking about wanting to, you know, go up against the guy. The guy gives you juice. But here's the issue for the Bears is that each and every week, guys keep getting better. Like, Sunday, there's no doubt that Justin Jefferson is the best offensive player on the Soldier Field turf. But guess what? Last week on the Soldier Field turf, Josh Jacobs was the best offensive player, the most dangerous player, and they got to face him again this year. Guess who else they have to face? Two more times this year. A guy they're going to face a week from yesterday. Okay, St. Brown. He's really good. He's one of those top guys in just in the NFC.
But he's a different threat.
Sure, my point is, Mully, each week, the problem is each and every week when the Bears take the field, they're always going against a better guy on offense than what the Bears have on offense. Even as good as our guy DJ Moore is, these guys that they're facing week in and week out are better. They have a fresh Christian McCaffrey still to play against before this season's over. He will be the best offensive player on the field that day. The problem is, as much as we've talked about the offensive weapons that Ryan Poles has gathered to put around Caleb Williams, week in and week out, the Bears don't have the best guy on the field on offense, and that's why they're at where they're at.
If McCaffrey were healthy when he plays the Bears, he probably can control the game at the running back position more than a wide receiver can at that position. So that may be the asterisk to this question. He might be the best offensive player remaining. Justin Jefferson is certainly in the top 2, 3, or 4 around the league. The most dangerous guy to face, I think, could be Tyreek Hill, just because of the speed element. Not that you could choose one over the other. One might be 1, the other one might be 1A. Justin Jefferson certainly makes circus catches, and his catch radius makes him as dangerous as any receiver in the league. Guy, you know, I'd rather have him than Jamar Chase. I'd rather have him almost than anybody, except for maybe Tyreek Hill, given the matchups. But that's kind of a different type of debate. You know, as far as what the Bears do with, I understand why they don't travel Jalen Johnson back and forth. I get that, the philosophy, and in theory they should be able to absorb that. But I would probably change my rules for this Sunday just because of the desperation mode that they're in this season. So I think they have to have a good, sound game plan. I would shake things up. I would try to confuse Sam Darnold and take your chances, because if not, Justin Jefferson will make you regret not adjusting to his rare talent, because he is going to be the best offensive player on the field Sunday.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh my God, what a question. What a question.
Pencil paper time around 7:42 with Joe Fortenbaugh. What did you think of Ken Rosenthal reporting in The Athletic that rival execs are saying the Cubs want to trade Cody Bellinger? What's the motivation? Is that a good or a bad idea?
I don't think it's a good idea. I'm not in favor of trading Cody Bellinger. I think that you don't get better by trading away one of your best players. And it doesn't make the Cubs any different if you keep him. I understand. Find somebody else to deal. I think the motivation might be the fact that he is more movable because of the contract and because of maybe the language in the contract that doesn't permit him to oppose a trade. Maybe that Scott Boras is whispering to Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins that they wanted a trade. I don't know what the situation is. I know that Seiya Suzuki and Ian Happ have language in their deals that prevent them from being traded. They have a no-trade clause. So maybe that's the source of some of this conversation and speculation. But I don't like any of it. Cody Bellinger should be a complement to another star, not as somebody who you miss because he's gone. He's probably going to have a bounce back year next season. He would have had a decent year this year, I believe, except for he ran into a wall and got hit by a pitch. That doesn't tell me he's injury prone. That tells me he had bad luck. So, found this very interesting that rival execs are talking about the Cubs dealing Bellinger. I would think you want to belly up to the bar in Chicago again.
This actually does make sense to me, and I wonder if Ken does this article with a bow tie on. Does he type this up with his bow tie? Kenny. Well, guys, because you're going to get rid of the money, and one of the trades they're talking about is getting two of the top 12 prospects from the Mets. Okay, so you move him to the Mets. The Cubs get back two of the Mets' top 12 prospects, a fielder and a pitcher. And then if Cody Bellinger goes to the Mets, who all of a sudden might be available from the Mets also? Not via trade, but via free agency.
And what if he signs back with the Mets?
Well, but what if, David? I'm just saying this is why it could make sense. It frees up $80 million guaranteed dollars to Cody Bellinger to spend elsewhere. Now, as long as they spend it, here my problem is, don't send Cody Bellinger off and maybe you got to pay 20 of the 80, 25 of the 80.
Why don't you get Alonso and Bellinger? You want more prospects? For what? So they can brag about how many prospects they have?
I would say that it makes sense to me that they're thinking about trading Cody Bellinger. I would imagine that somewhere in the dark recesses, they didn't think he was going to opt in, and they may have mentally done some of the gymnastics. What if that doesn't happen? And now that he's there, now that he's back, it creates a whole new series of problems, such as, you know, where are you going to play your right fielder? Because Bellinger is going to remain as a starting outfielder, and you feel good that you got a center fielder in Pete Crow Armstrong. So, you know, are you going to use the guy as a DH? No, you'll use him as an outfielder. You're not going to use him as a first baseman. And so how do you get better? Well, you got to get more money in order to spend. And this is, you got a couple of corner outfielders that have no trade clauses. This is a movable piece. It's not ideal. I think there's a reason that you went out and got him, and he certainly had a really good first year here, but he took a step back a little bit last year, and Dustin's right. Maybe you need power more than you need a guy with some really good defensive ability and a nice bit of power, but not as a necessarily a premium. I don't know. I mean, they got to do something. We talk about who they're going to move and how they're going to clear some spots. Kind of makes sense to me. Not saying I'm in love with it. Just saying, when you look at their team, it almost makes sense.
Yes. Hey, well, here's another question.
Grody time. Answering questions with Mully and Haw, 8:25 this morning. Okay, a couple predictions coming your way. Prediction time number one. Even without Patrick Williams and Lonzo Ball, do you believe the Bulls will finally win their first NBA Cup game against the Hawks from Atlanta on the red court of the UC? Are they overdue? 0-5 so far since the inception of this NBA Cup.
Well, I know David doesn't really care about the NBA Cup, which is why I wanted to mention the NBA Cup a couple times. I think it's funny. But I do think that they need to beat the Hawks. I think that's one of the teams. I'm just saying, looking around, I know everybody wants them to start losing games, etc. I'm not on board with that. That'll all come naturally when they make whatever move that is out there before the season is over. But I think looking at their team right now, they should win this game. And the fact that it's in the NBA Cup just means that your eyes are going to hurt watching television, because the floor is going to really be like a screaming red. But yeah, this is just more about a time in the season where you'd like to see them rally and win, and I think they can get away without Patrick Williams and Lonzo Ball in this game. I'd like to see them have a good performance.
I think it all depends on, can they score? I think they'd have to score probably 130 tonight to win. They're going to live and die by the three-pointer. That's what they're going to do all year long. I did tell you guys the other night, Tuesday night, I got hooked into the NBA Cup, and I watched the Celtics on that green court. And at first I thought, and then I thought, boy, this is big time. It's different. It's scream big time to me. So I hope that I get that tonight. I'm not going to say that I am. I don't have a whole lot of plans tonight, so maybe I'll get drawn into the Red United Center court.
Yeah, all I'm going to get is a headache watching the Red court. The Bulls are going to beat the Hawks. Lonzo Ball is not somebody I even consider part of the plan, so he's a bonus. He's like, anything you get from him this season feels like it will be an extra. We kind of got teased and what he's capable of the first couple games, and then he disappears again. It's tough. He's got bad injury luck, and I just don't think that they are in a position to say, you know, without Lonzo Ball, I'm not sure what they're like with him. I kind of forget now. But Patrick Williams is a bigger issue and one that I think has more big picture, long-term implications than short picture, short-term implications, because Torrey Craig is a pretty capable replacement. He might even be an upgrade by in some games because of how many different boxes he checks. And he'll play tonight, and I think they'll beat the Hawks tonight. They're at home, and Zach will probably fill it up for 15 points in the fourth quarter, and Dustin will be deciding between whether or not he can be, feel good about watching a game on that red floor and feeling good about a game that Zach LaVine played like an all-star. Can you still cheer for those games, Dustin, even though you don't like Zach LaVine? Did you see that story about Vince Goodwill? Quick aside.
Yes.
Zach boxed over the summer to get tougher, to get in shape, to train that way. A lot of respect for this guy. Growing respect for Zach LaVine. I think Zach LaVine has a big fourth quarter tonight, and Zach leads the Bulls over the Hawks.
No shot.
The last question will be,
prediction time number two. Would you bet a dose of David Haw's money on Indiana covering the nearly 2-touchdown deficit in a point spread at Ohio State on Saturday? Can the Hoosiers actually win the game straight up? Is it possible they could be beaten badly enough to lose a spot in the 12-team playoff? How much of a deficit would it take?
Okay, I feel targeted here a little bit. I feel targeted here. If the Hoosiers beat Ohio State straight up, David Haw's money will be buying breakfast Monday. Okay?
Wow. Here we
they
go.
Will, that will be...
Go Indiana!
Go Hoosiers! That will be the upset of the weekend. I don't expect it to happen. It would be great if it did. You talk about something great for a sport. If Indiana beats Ohio State to remain unbeaten and move up from where they are right now in the polls, that's a tremendous accomplishment. I think it's still going to be a 2-touchdown loss. It's probably going to be something like 35-21, 38-23, something like that. I just feel like they're not ready yet. But they have put themselves in a position where on November 22nd, we're still talking about Indiana football. That's good for the Big Ten. The expansion of the Big Ten, I didn't think in this season where the conference is bigger than ever, that we'd be talking about Indiana being the team that probably has the coach of the year in the conference. So they got to keep it within 2 touchdowns for people not to think that they don't belong in the 12-team playoff.
So according to Circus Sports Illinois, Ohio State is a 10-point favorite on Saturday. Seems a little low to me. I have heard people say that, you know, Ohio State's not the type of team that goes out and blows teams out. They're going to play complimentary football. They're going to grind you down. You'd have to possibly worry about a backdoor cover. For me, I mean, listen, if I'm going to get a free breakfast on it, then go Hoosiers. I'm all for, I mean, I don't like Ohio State. I don't like their coach. I don't like his dyed beard. There's a lot not to like about Ohio State. If Indiana is the fifth best school in college football, this is a bad year of college football. Sorry.
That is so wrong.
Yes, it is, David. It's not wrong, it's correct. We're all entitled to our opinions. That's what the point of this segment is.
I hope you choke on your breakfast when David buys it.
Well, that's for a whole other reason.
That's bad for college football?
Okay, I mean, just to match what David has said, I will buy breakfast on Monday if Army beats Notre Dame. How about that? That way all our Notre Dame fans can at least know they're getting a free breakfast.
What if Army and Indiana win?
Oh, my God.
Well, I won't be here.
I want to talk about this for a second, though, because, first of all, yes, I would bet David's money on anything. As long as it's not my money, I'll take any wager and I'll go at it. And you'd be stunned at what a big spender I could be if I'm on someone else's coin. But I would say this. That, okay, I get it. Ohio State is a different caliber opponent than Indiana. They haven't played anyone like Ohio State, and Ohio State has played some good teams. Ohio State and Indiana, though, have two common opponents, right? Both teams played Michigan State, and both teams played Nebraska. And you would have to say that Indiana beat those teams as well or maybe better than Ohio State did. This is a really big game, and it's Ohio State at home, and they're in the horseshoe, and the Buckeyes are, a great team, and they would have beaten Oregon if that game was at Ohio State. And so I think that the problem you have here is that Ohio State is at a point in the year where they're really functioning at a high level, and they played a good game recently, and they're capable of really doing well. But I think when you look at the common opponents, this could be a decent football game. I think the guy's a really good coach. I don't think he's going to have his team feeling overwhelmed. They may get overwhelmed, and it may end up being too big a moment just because of the quality of the opponent. And again, when you're a good team and you're playing well, it's hard not to be good. And I think that the fact that they're rated fifth in the country – and the fact that all of the things that are at stake, Ohio State wants another bite at the apple against Oregon. So I think Ohio State's going to win the football game. But I think Indiana can play this game better than people expect. And I do think the backdoor cover is in play. So we'll find out more from Joe Fortenbaugh. But I mean, I get it. I understand all that is at stake. And I think that at the end of the day, I think Indiana's going to make that Final 12.
I think they will too.
Yeah.
And if they upset Ohio State in the horseshoe, there will be one person in America that thinks that's bad for college football.
Dustin?
Yeah.
Okay.
That wasn't what I said, David.
What did you say?
Did I say if they beat Ohio State? I said if... If they're the fifth best team in the country, this is a bad brand of college football. That's what I said.
I thought you said it was bad for college football.
No, I said it's a bad brand of college football. It's not bad for college football. It just means that college football is down. It means that it's not as good as it used to be.
Nothing is.
Well, that's probably something we could agree on.
If Army beats Notre Dame, you get free breakfast. But does that mean that the Army coach should be hired by the Bears to be the next head coach?
Well, you'd have to ask David that, not me. I didn't put that question. I don't submit the questions. I just decide which ones we ask. And that was actually a real... You know why that was a good question? Because it generated a ton of conversation.
What did I do to get picked on today?
I'm not picking on you.
How are you picked on? I offer you a free breakfast if
we're getting breakfast on Tuesday, by the way, if you check your email.
Oh, my God. I'll buy you a free breakfast on Tuesday.
All right, let's get
the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the score.